How are they doing? What types of mitigation?
In our application, when we did the research, we did note that our students who lead in math are higher than the schools around us. So their program, their partnership with Johns Hopkins is working very well with those students. Our English scores are not as high as we'd like them to be. So, and our science, when you look at the data for the high schools, definitely a need in writing and science. So those two areas will be definitely challenges. Through our AVID program, we have a writing model for all students wherever they are. We will implement that at every level. And they're not just going to see it in the English classrooms, but they'll see it in the technology classroom. They'll see it in the math classroom. They'll see it in the engineering classroom. They'll be expected to write in the student advisory program. So it's a model that we will use in each and every class. And I think that's a huge step for all of our teachers. This is where we start with every student. This is our goal. And our goal is the AP Writing, Literature, and Language courses. Same thing with the science. The science is definitely a challenge. We have in our schedule, the first 2 years, all students take technology and all students take engineering. The technology is going to work with the science program so that science is the focus of both of those core curriculums. The support for science will come from the technology program. The support for math will come from the engineering program. The support for our English courses is our blended learning, where specifically needed. But those also, through our AVID program, our reading strategies, all teachers will use their reading strategies, and it will be in every class, every period.
If I may add to that just one point, the Riverside Elementary School District at 73% at proficiency level in mathematics supersedes all the scores of all surrounding feeder schools to all feeder school districts within a 15-20 mile radius, which is pretty impressionistic. And so I just wanted to say that out loud. Those are our English language learners, special ed students, gifted, and also students that never in their mind thought that they would be able to perform in that manner. Thank you.
What do you see as the biggest obstacle in starting a charter school in this community, and what are your plans to overcome that?
I'm going to answer that a tiny bit, and then I'm going to pass it to our headmaster and give an open to the board members as well an opportunity to say something that they like. The biggest obstacle, always, all the time, is making sure that you have your ducks lined up in a row. And planning this for 5 years and then making a blueprint. Data, research, trends, collaborative partnerships across the board, and engaging all kinds of communities and stakeholders, is ensuring and making sure that there's sustainability across the board, not just in the financial spectrum or the educational or inside the classroom, but making sure that the community is involved, the stakeholders from the community, the parents, the business owners, and getting them there. That's always the biggest challenge for a lot of organizations and being able to grow it from grassroots leadership. So we're keeping a very close eye on making sure that there is involvement of all those stakeholders. And I think I specifically answer your question because we tried being in this business for over 22 years and being research-based and being preventative and proactive. We pay close attention to the details and making sure that we don't have any gaps. We will have lower results, but we're going to hit those lower results as we benchmark everything moving forward. So thank you for that question. Ms. Salas?
I think the points that Mr. Gutierrez made, just to add to that, is our job is going to have to be to go out into the community and educate our community, letting them know what does STEM mean. So you mean I just have to do math all day or science all day? That doesn't sound like any fun. But opening their, they need to understand that this will open their opportunities, whether they go into a STEM career or not. It's those critical thinking strategies that are so important nowadays that I think, to be quite honest, I think we have a whole generation of people that are making bad decisions. But those are key. Another key is exposing them to what going to college looks like, because a lot of our students, they don't have parents who can say to them, you know, when you start college, it's going to be tough and God loves. We need to expose them. We need to provide those opportunities for them. So as a community, we need to come together and we need to do our part and bring them in and go out to them and say, these are the opportunities, that these are the doors that we're open. Because I think that's huge with our population.
And respectfully, panel board, is it okay if I have the... Thank you so much, Mr. Leon.
So, you know, obviously some of the challenges that you foresee with any kind of startup would be support, that'd be support in general. And one of the things that we've been proactive about was setting up support systems for EEF through Riverside as well. And through that collaboration, we've been able to bridge a lot of gaps that you would normally see in any type of a charter school startup. I've got children that are in a charter today, and while I'm in California, I see the deficiencies within the own charter organization, and I see where we could do a better job in that organization. So the plan that we've put together for EEF-MIT has been to bridge a lot of those gaps and to make sure that every child that walks through that door is going to be successful. So one of the challenges that I foresee, and I think this is a future challenge, is the number that we're trying to hit, while it's impressive, I think we're going to have a higher demand for that as time goes on. Because this is going to be such a success. And that's, again, maybe overconfident on our part or my part for saying that, but I do believe that what we are doing here is definitely for the betterment of the charter school organization.
And if you permit me to just, I wanted to ask a question about those gaps. So you're talking about during year zero, during sort of implementation year, or are you talking about after the school is open?
After the school is open.
After the school is open.
Correct.
All right, thank you.
If I may add to that, I've been working in the engineering industry for over 20 years, and I see the deficiencies in diversity in attracting women into science, technology, engineering, and math, in attracting minorities. And I know there's precedent there, there's been collaborations there on higher education, but we'll have to go out, and this is the challenge that I see, and educate firms like mine and other firms that we're going to try to partner with, and tell them about how this is going to be done at a high school level. And to them, that's, I think, going to be kind of a foreign type of concept, that really you can really do this at this level at a high school, that you're going to want to send kids to our company and intern with us, so they can understand engineering, that they can understand technology, math, and science. You're going to want to do that. We can partner with you on that. I think that is going to be our challenge, and something that I'm actually looking forward to, because it is an exciting proposition, and it's something that I think really needs to occur to attract the best and brightest into the STEM industries and get STEM careers.
I'd like to ask just a follow-up question about, so if you looked at the data, the jobs data for these industries in terms of what will be needed in the future, and I want to know to what extent you're planning, I hate to call it pipeline because it's just, you know, kids, but tell me about that if you don't mind, about what that looks like. The need will be.
I know we have, and I think
we like to get to this.
One of the gaps that that I see in putting this application together was we are going to need to go to the universities, and we're going to need to, with them, we want to be that pipeline. We want to establish that pipeline. So information about what are those courses that we could provide for our students that would give them the leg up in, you know, or an advantage into getting into these STEM programs. I think that's something that we really will have to collaborate and articulate so that students know when they walk in, you know, they'll be exposed to all of these things. When I decide I want to go to mechanical engineering, what, you know, tell me what I can provide for that student at my level so that he's prepared for your program. Not to take lower level courses, but I want to be the lower level course before he gets to the university.
Well, and I sort of wondered, I don't want to leave this discussion, but that's one way when you talked about going into the community and educating them, one way to make it real, of course, is to let them know there are jobs waiting for them right at the other end. So I was just wondering about how that is a part of what you communicate or how you...
Absolutely, yes. And we've done a lot of research on looking at the trends and patterns. It shows on research right now that by the year 2023, there will be a market of $113 trillion in technology, untapped. This is technology. With our collaborative partnerships like Grand Canyon University, Arizona State University, American Dream Academy, STEM learning through Grand Canyon University across the board with teacher preparation programs, we also know that Latino Hispanics have a very, very low margin, very low percentage of getting these types of college career pathways because they're not introduced to this college career ready pathways because of the number one, we talked about this earlier, they don't have the cognitive ability or the competence to be able to be placed in those programs. Well, we're breaking ranks right here. We're showing that our students have the capacity, have the ability to be enrolled in these types of programs. Therefore, we want to help our Latino Hispanic communities and students be part of this opportunities in the community and the public, not just here in the state, but nationally. Absolutely. And I think that speaks a tiny bit to what you're asking about, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. I won't take too much time there.
Can we talk about students? We talked about teachers. Let's talk about parents. What opportunities are there going to be for parents to be involved in government services?
Absolutely. And if I may, I hold that very dearly to my heart. I was the initiator for, and I think this is important for Secretary Rob Page, Secretary of Education, parents' rights to know with school choice. So parent involvement is extremely important. We also formalized the plan through a collaborative partnership with Riverside School District with American Dream Academy and helping parents about learn about their rights in school, the systemic process about a handbook and looking at the discipline and looking at the structure of instruction. So with that said, we make sure that that's one of the guiding principles of everything that we're doing with parent involvement, because they're the ones helping students make their decisions. They're not of age yet. So we have to keep that in the forefront. With that said, I'm gonna pass the baton here to Mrs. Gonzalez, and then we'll jump in interchangeably. Thank you.
And we talked in the application, we talked about in year two and year three, really going out into the community and having them do the educational piece so that they know what STEM is all about and what our goals are. And then through that, looking for creating a board, which at Riverside has a board of community members. We would also have a board of community members to add to our current board. So the board would grow to have people from the community, our stakeholders involved in our decision making. And I think it's important to have someone that's going with connections to the community to help us with bringing collaborative partnerships. We need parents in our community talking about what STEM is and the experiences their children are having in our school. So definitely a piece for them to be part of our board. That's a goal of ours.
Thank you very much. In addition to that, the board has to have some skin in the game. And the only way to do that is by integrating your community, involving parents, making sure the parents have a voice, that every decision that is being made at MIT is specifically aligned to what's best for students. And I start all my conversations with what's best for students. Is it student-centered? Is it specifically aligned to helping students be successful? If there's anything that is being done in any of the schools or at the district level or in any planning, whatever goal it is it student-centered? And with that comes the responsibility of that person responsible to oversee that process to ask the question, is this a parent? Is it a guardian? Is it a person that has been given the responsibility to oversee this child? Because I'll tell you, and I'll say this to anybody, our community has a lot of students that don't have parents, that come from broken homes, that have been assigned a case manager, and a lot of the times the teachers and the counselors are the parents. Having been a board member myself for charter schools for over 7 years, and been a board member of the public system going on 4 years now, governance, that's the number one rule. The number one principle is, with any administrator, any educator, you ask yourself that question. My job as a governing board member or a governing group or team is to oversee that the policies being implemented based on Arizona Charter Schools, you know, services and policies and what's being done. But the nitty-gritty comes where that teacher, that principal, are adjusting accordingly to meet the needs of students, that are safeguarding the best practices, that are protecting students with input from who? From that guardian or that parent. And we have very difficult laws in the state of Arizona that we need to make sure that we keep very close contact with parents and guardians. So with that, if anybody would like to add anything, please, starting with Mr. Calderon.
Well, I was going to say, just as a board, we believe in this strongly. There are studies show that the more parent involvement you have within this school, the better the child's going to do. And we understand that. Personally, when our children entered school age, my wife made the decision not to work so that she could be more involved in school. Now, I understand that not everybody can do that. And believe me, we couldn't do it. There was no way she could stop working. But we found a way to do it because it was that important for us to be involved in our child's education, because we understand that those children are going to go a little bit higher than the children that don't. So as a board, we stand behind this very strongly. We want more parent involvement, and we'll get out there in the community to ensure that more parents are informed about what's going on within the MIT, and that we get them involved in any factor, any way that we can.
If I may add to that, it takes a village. You've heard that. And in a community like ours that we're speaking of, it will literally take the village. It will take everybody's collaboration to actually ensure that all of these students are meeting the requirements, number one, but also that they want to be there. You know, it's important for us to create an environment that they feel safe in, but they also feel confident in. And it's going to take parent involvement in doing so. Like I said, I'm part of a charter school myself with my children, and we have homework. But it's important for us to do so because we're involved with that process so that we know what our children are doing at all times and where they're falling short.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
What are your strategies to get, I mean, you're talking, I mean, I agree, I hear, you know, parents are very important. And I'm also hearing there's not a lot of parents.
If I may, I'd like to start that conversation. Our strategies could be sound overwhelming, and at the same time they sound like out of this world. I was an English language learner myself. I was the first generation immigrant to the United States, migrant student. You're probably looking at me, you're looking at this guy. I know what those kids go through day in and day out. I know what those kids go through as I know what their parents go through. My parents made $10,000 a year, five students, went to college, all five of us. Well, those kids are going through the same things right now. That cycle, that trend, that pattern will not be broken without parent involvement. The only time my parent received communication was when it was translated we're in an English-only state in Arizona. We always ask the question, the difficult question, how are you going to communicate with parents when our state requires that you should only speak English? Now, with that said, we have a lot of challenges ahead of us, a lot of barriers. But internally, as an organization at Riverside Elementary School District, we make it our focus, we make it our mission and vision to be able to contact every single parent by having specific evaluation protocols that meet the framework for Arizona on evaluating teachers and also principals. One of the most specific steps on there is parent involvement, parent communication that is relevant and meaningful to the alignment of the student's learning. What does that mean? That means that if you make a phone call to the parent, it has to be locked in, but it has to be locked with meaningful and relevant conversation and alignment to daily observations, to weekly and monthly formal and informal assessment and evaluation, in addition to that, to benchmark assessment. I know it sounds like, wow, do you really do all that? We do all that, and it's all documented. It hasn't been simple to do that, to begin the culture, to implement that culture, but most importantly, the sustainability and being able to say it's being done on a routinely basis. It's part of our expectation and our process at Riverside School District, which is now being disseminated and articulated across the board as we move forward with all the planning and implementation and structuring of MIT. And now I'll pass it on to Ms. Gonzalez.
And as a principal, charter schools, parent involvement has always been, I think, key to the success with students. I was a principal up here at one of the charter schools. In my conversations with parents, it was always about, let's bring more parents to the table. Let's bring more parents to, so they know the culture that you created, the safety of our school, the high expectations you have. They were willing to go out and on behalf of the school communicate to other parents who couldn't speak English or other parents who were having difficulty with their school. And that's how you have to be done. In every place that I have been, I didn't just sit in my office and wait for kids to show up at my door. That's not real life. I was out in the community. I was meeting with you.
If I may follow up on that.
Sure.
Ellis, you mentioned that you've been attached to other schools. So tell me what excites you about this school compared to the other schools you've served in. I know you've always been excited to work, to serve.
I love my job.
Yeah, but what is it about?
Yeah, yes. And when I've always said, the day that I don't love my job, I'm gonna go to the hospital and hold babies. Okay. What excites me about this job is I have an opportunity to create the culture on the first day. Something that was lacking in my previous experience as a charter principal was the facility. You know, I started the first AVID program. My AVID kids graduated from that school at the top of the whole class. Those were the first kids in the AVID program. But I failed to provide them with a lab facility so that they could take those science classes. I failed to provide them with some of those higher level classes that should have been there because I couldn't get the funding to continue. And I think here, I finally had that opportunity to build something for our kids to take them to the next level from the ground up and plan for it and really get out there and market and bring people in. And it'll be a place where I know all of those, I will have help. I will have help from the board. I will have support from the Riverside community. And I think that's huge.
So when you look
one thing I've always prided myself with different budgeting, and in working with the Riverside School District. The Riverside School District is committed to whatever we open and with their support. They're committed to 50 students. We only get 50 students, they will provide the support that we need as we grow each year to reach our numbers. Their support with the facility, their support with the services of special ed department. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say other than they're willing to support the school with the numbers.
And if I may add to that, I think that the key word here is, it's kind of like the topic previously that we were discussing, and then I'll come back to this question, is when people say parent involvement and getting parents involved, parents want to go where they feel welcomed and accepted and where it's nice, warm, and fuzzy, and they know their kids are being taken care of. You heard that saying, you know, don't showcase something if you haven't built it very well. People want to come to our schools. When we first took over Riverside Elementary School District as an administrative team, we only had 300-something students. We're over 1,100 students now. We've quadrupled our enrollment rates. We're experts at that. We're experts at that. Any school districts that we run as a cumulative administrative leadership team, we've doubled, tripled those numbers. Now, with this specific question is, you know, if we have 50 students, like Ms. Gonzalez just mentioned, we have the buildings and capacity to be able to support that through our agreement. But I think that the most important thing is that everything is on track. Construction will be completed, the facility will be done, and parents are anxious. They're calling, they're sending letters, emails. We're having meetings with parents and meet the teacher or headmaster and the superintendent, learn about the vision. Parents are asking the right questions, they're excited. So thank you for that question.
And let me just say, so I mean, ask you to be hypothetical here, because one reason we ask that question, it is to figure out what sort of support you have and how you want to stay on track. But the other side, obviously, is to figure out what your priorities are. Because we're just, it's hypothetical if you're cut, you
yes.
know, for whatever reason. So we can approach it a different way. We could say, if district funding is cut, right, or something, which happened in my district many times, right? So if you had to, looking at your plan, you have the plan that is here. Here, where would you cut first if you had to cut? How would you reframe it if you had to reframe it again?
Well, if we had to reframe, then we'd look at the number of students we met. Mm-hmm. And if that means I have to be in the classroom and we get another teacher, then that's because, you know, we all know that salaries are a big chunk. Next to facilities, then your salaries. Mm-hmm. So if we only have 50 students, realistically, what is it that we need to do? We've got a blended learning program. You know, that can, we can surely, you know, we're going to have to rely on that more as we grow. But we, you know, we're gonna look at staff definitely.
And let me add a little bit to that, if I may, Ms. Gonzalez. Reframing is a big concept in the charter world, although we're also, I think what really, hypothetically speaking, but also looking at it from a logical perspective and being preventative, we have that backbone of experts in special ed and special ed teachers, ELL and ELL teachers. We're able to immediately shift staff with minimal cost into providing support services and supporting Ms. Gonzalez. We make that commitment at 200%.
Looking at the budget and the plan, it looks like the COO, will be working without pay for a time. Is that accurate, or did we just read that?
That is correct.
So please tell me about that. Is this
no problem?
Yeah,
absolutely. As an associate superintendent, through the whole planning process, we've engaged our district's attorney and CPA attorney as well. And also we've engaged Stray Educational Foundation attorney and making sure that they will provide the expertise and support in any type of work that needs to be done, and be able to assist with that transition with no pay. And the reason for that is because that excites me. I'm really excited about getting this plan to work and saying, this is an opportunity for us to give back to those subgroups and those communities where we came from. And I apologize for something so humble and whatever. But, you know, this is personal, you know, in the sense that, we want this to succeed. And we want to make sure that we move it forward and assist in making sure that it's successful. That's number one. Number two, we also know that the fact that Riverside Elementary School District understands that the students would benefit tremendously, I was approached and I said, absolutely, zero pay, I'll do it in a heartbeat. And that's my personal story behind that, and I apologize for getting so personal. But now, the business side of things is, everything's done in such a great manner, very transparent. The board for Riverside Elementary School District is in support of the superintendent and the founder and the board of the Stride Educational Foundation, extremely transparent with the process, also with working in preparation and planning with the headmaster. I just serve as a conduit, and it goes in reference to the COO / authorized representative. I'm a conduit, I'm a liaison between the school district and the Stride Educational Foundation, and providing my expertise, my background and knowledge, and helping and assisting and making it work. And there's a contractual agreement for being a volunteer, by the way. It's not just I volunteer. There's a contractual agreement by Mr. Gutierrez with attorneys saying Mr. Gutierrez agrees to volunteer in the construction of this and supporting the board, making sure that all procurement guidelines, all policies are being met, and that they're being guided with my expertise in guiding multi-million dollar grants and running A-plus schools, nationally recognized schools. I commit to this 200%. Hopefully that answers your question.
Okay, so you're going to be, Stride Education Foundation and the district are going to be working very closely together, it sounds like. You have a lot of what appears on the shared expenses. How are you going to look at it? So like we're seeing busing expenses, I'm seeing NSLP program, I'm seeing special ed. How will you reconcile or how will you monitor those expenses between the two organizations? Like, how often do you need work with plans for this?
That's a great question. We do have ADP working for Stride Educational Foundation, and we also have COM, CPA organization working for us. And there are several organizations that ADP works for. As of right now, we utilize the Visions program through the district, but the Stride Educational Foundation, MIT, we want to give autonomy to MIT. MIT will be managing all of the finances through MIT. Keeping that in mind, most importantly, I think that in ensuring that everything is being done accordingly, and we have our books very clean, like we always do, we want to make sure that everything is being conducted and managed through MIT, the charter school. Now, when we talked about services and collaborative efforts, those are services such as, like you mentioned earlier, special ed or ELL. We provide reports that will reflect fair market value. And I think FMV is the key word across the board, because finance specialists will always tell us, look, it's got to be fair market value, not to supersede the 10%. We try to keep it around the 10% provided services, and it's got to be consistent and sustainable, but at the same time, it's got to benefit MIT. And it's got to also support Riverside School District, but I think the emphasis and focus here is MIT. It's got to be sustainable, because without the funding, you can't sustain the programs. And that's the main focus. And I'll allow Ms. Gonzalez to provide you some more feedback on that.
And if you look at the application, they have a 10%, which is based on student enrollment. And all of those things that come with the 10% is through the partnership. The other items that are listed under contracted services aren't necessarily with the Riverside School District. You know, I can only, if I can only get one bus and it fits in my budget, then the one bus, you know, I'll go out there and look for who's going to provide me the best service at the cheapest price. So that will be contracted out. Now, if it's Riverside, then it's through a contract, a contracted quote. But there's definitely the 10% with the partnership, and there's the contracted services. So they're two different budget items.
Who's going to monitor disputes or disagreements?
I'm sorry?
Who would monitor disputes or disagreements?
Dispute resolutions, of course, that would be myself. I'm very knowledgeable with doing dispute resolutions across the board. But also, I'd like to engage all stakeholders. I'd like to keep the board informed, obviously. But most importantly, I'd like to engage financial representatives. I want to see the numbers. And something was coming to my mind as I was listening to Ms. Gonzalez. I gave you a scenario. You could have 5 students within district boundaries for Riverside. That could be a total separate scenario. And therefore, hey, we have 5 students running a route. We already have a bus going through there. Can we pick them up? And you do your calculations, as we know. But what Ms. Gonzalez had just mentioned, going back to that, hey, we could have separate routes being run for the specific purpose of getting them to school. So the dispute resolutions, they should, I'm highly trained in saying, let's prevent those dispute resolutions, but we have a process for that. Number one, we want to make sure that there's an accountability process for finances. Number two, who's responsible for that? And then number three, continue to assess it through the school year and making sure that we have our checkpoints for internal audits. Hopefully that answers your question.
So I would assume, again, this is based on my own experience, I'm sure the district already has policies related to this. We do a solution. I would assume you would fall under those.
Yes.
So does that call for mediation? You know, what does it call for?
It calls, the dispute resolution calls for, okay, let's look at the situation. Number one, and then number two, engaging individuals, and then number three, that's when the mediation comes in, only if there's a dispute taking place. And then you come up with a recommendation with specific timelines. It could be 3 days, it could be 2 weeks, depending on different policies.
Thank you.
I think we're
done.
Okay.
What do you want me to do?
Oh, well, they have a
conversation. Oh,
I do, if you guys don't mind.
Absolutely, sorry.
And you know what, I appreciate it. Okay, our strength is that we are pioneering new ground. This is a great opportunity for a rigorous STEM education that is in alignment with the need of the community. Not only the Riverside community, but the economic community in terms of preparing a future workforce. We have the strength of individuals from the STEM industries on our board. We have the strength with decades of education and experience coming to the table. We have about 2 years in the making in developing a plan that has included traveling to some of the best schools in the country, working with partners, organizations, being very intentional about the development of our instruction and the interventions and the scaffolding that was necessary to meet the needs of students. We are well aware of the upcoming needs of the operations, and we will work relentlessly to support them. We have an innovative partnership with Boundary School Districts, but yet open to any student that wants to enroll in this opportunity. This is going to be an asset for the community, for Phoenix, for Arizona, for our future workforce. But it's not just the big idea. It's really intentional, and the 2 years in the making of strong articulated programming with the right leadership in order to execute this plan. We humbly and respectfully thank you for giving us this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
review. To conclude the in-person interview, I will describe your next steps. The technical review panel will evaluate the scores from the review of your written application package, as well as the findings of the interview panel today. This will include whether your written application package met the scoring criteria specified in the application, and whether the interview panel finds sufficient capacity to operate a charter school. Next, a recommendation report will be submitted to board staff and presented to the board at the December 14th, 2015 meeting. That meeting is slated to begin at 9 a.m. The recommendation report will be part of the board packet of materials that are posted online 2 weeks in advance to that meeting date, so you'll be able to see it in advance. If you have any questions about the next steps between now and then, I will be your contact person and I'll leave you with my card. Once again, the Arizona State Board for Charter Schools and the Technical Review Panel would like to thank you for coming in today and for your interest in providing quality education spaces to students in Arizona.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.